Thank you very much, Pam Jones. Steve Bertrand here. This actually was President Gerald Ford's favorite song, and that's why we chose to start the Wintrust Business Lunch with that today. Welcome to Monday, President's Day, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We're going to talk later today with Marilyn Byrd, the district president of Robert Half in Chicago. You know, there was a spike, I think the highest number in 17 years, the percentage or number of employees in December who said, I quit, I'm moving somewhere else. So the job market is tighter. There are more jobs to be had. We will talk to Marilyn about what employers need to do to keep those workers happy, to keep them employed. That's actually going to come up in our first segment as well. I think we'll talk to the folks from Chicago. You know, Catherine Davis is in the studio. Catherine, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Jim Dahlke is on a phone line because, of course, he reveres President's Day and is determined to spend every President's Day, what, in the Western suburbs?
That's right. Spending this lovely, overcast, rainy, wet, gross President's Day out in Geneva, Illinois.
Well, aren't you glad you spent the day away from downtown? Because Catherine came in without an umbrella.
Yeah, unfortunately. Pretty wet today.
Oh, brutal.
That's not too bad. We'll all survive. Okay, but Catherine, you had a story about the Hyperloop. And I'm fascinated by this because I don't know why. I'm not quite convinced this is something we need. But tell me about the Hyperloop. And there are some competing companies, right?
Yeah. So the Hyperloop, it's a concept actually invented by Elon Musk, designed to transport passengers or cargo at super high speeds in like capsules or pods. So different from a train, but moving at really high speeds. And so Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, they're actually based in California, but they signed agreements with the Illinois Department of Transportation and the North Ohio Area Code Coordinating Agency to begin working on a study to see how realistic it is.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars for the study, right? Didn't I read that? No?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
but they're going to determine how
millions of dollars.
to build a Hyperloop that runs from Chicago to Cleveland in as little as 28 minutes.
Okay, and so that's one group, right? And then there's another group that's looking to go to Columbus and Pittsburgh, right? Chicago, Columbus, Pittsburgh.
Yep, so that's Hyperloop 1. And so they're going to get riders from Chicago to Columbus in less than 30 minutes and then from Columbus to Pittsburgh in 20 minutes.
Okay, Jim Dahlke, explain for me why we need this.
So, right, that's an interesting question because maybe you and I wouldn't. But, I mean, when you think about what kind of infrastructure the Hyperloop is going to allow the United States to have, I mean, it can totally rethink the way people live and work. You can literally live in Cleveland and commute to downtown Chicago faster than I can currently commute from Geneva to downtown
right.
Chicago. So, I mean, it totally rethinks the way that people live their lives. And so, I mean, we're still pretty far away from this, but it's got a pretty big implication.
Yeah, you know, I want to correct my sentiment there because I'm all for new things and trying things. I think it's an exciting idea. I'm just not sure what the market is. So, Catherine, but you also wrote that it could be people or cargo.
Right.
Could this really in the end be about cargo?
It could. I mean, you know, one of the reasons they said they want to come here is just because there's, you know, a big manufacturing presence, raw materials here, and so they could be transporting those things throughout the Midwest where they need
them. Jim, so do you think this will come to pass, Jim? Is this something that's going to happen?
You know what? If it does come to pass, Chicago will be one of the first cities to benefit from it. I mean, what we're seeing right now is a lot of very early proposals of people sort of trying to test the feasibility of this. And all of these proposals are involving Chicago. So if this ends up coming to fruition, Chicago's going to be the center of it. It's also interesting, Elon Musk's other company, the Boring Company,
right,
which is sort of an underground tunneling company. I mean, you know, they're in the running for, you know, the project from O'Hare to downtown. So there are kind of three separate projects all involved around high-speed transit, all looking at Chicago. So really kind of interesting to see how Chicago is really the epicenter of this sort of, you know, Hyperloop, fast transit movement.
Is Musk doing something like this, like a Hyperloop in California, or no?
So the Hyperloop actually is working, Elon Musk's company, the Boring Company, is looking at some routes with like the New York to DC route as well. So I know initially they were doing some digging and testing in California too. So there's a little bit happening in the East Coast, a little bit happening in the West Coast, and then now obviously some increased focus here in the Midwest.
Now, Catherine, so to get to Cleveland in 28 minutes, really I think to get out of Cleveland in 28 minutes might be more attractive, but So thank you for the laugh track, Jim. But it's an amazing speed, right? Clearly faster than you can fly. There'd have to be safety concerns. But how do you know in your reporting how fast a person would actually be moving?
No, I don't know miles per hour, but clearly pretty quick.
I mean, that's just it's hard to imagine physiologically that someone could handle that. So we'll see. Okay, so I mentioned earlier that we're going to talk to Marilyn Bird about keeping workers, keeping millennials and all of that. And that kind of brings me to this company Percent Pledge, which is... tell me about Percent Pledge.
Yeah, so they're actually based out of 1871, the tech incubator here, and they're aiming to provide greater nonprofit transparency for users. So they've created kind of like a platform where users can enter their budget, salary information, and determine how much money they want to give on a monthly basis to a charity of their choice.
So and they started by giving it to people, right, to do individuals, and they're relatively young, but just decided recently to go more to business to business, right, to try to get businesses to use it to make themselves attractive to millennial workers.
Right. So they're letting companies now choose how much they want to donate as well.
And Jim, I know they're working. So I was at a party in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, and I ran into Matt Reuter, who along with Chris Reuter are a couple of the guys behind Spikeball. And I told him then, I said, well, you talk about Spikeball all the time on this show. And here in this article is Spikeball again. They are working with this Percent Pledge to make it more attractive for their employees to donate.
That's right. Yeah, the Spikeball team is sort of piloting this project with Percent Pledge. So they're incorporating it for their about 23 or so employees. And really, the Percent Pledge story is a story that's not unlike many Chicago startups before them, right? They tried to be a consumer startup,
right,
found it difficult to scale, and they realized, like, well, wait a minute. You know, going the B2B route can really help us scale. So that's exactly what they're doing. They're connecting right with the folks' employers. So basically, from your paycheck every month, you know, you can give a certain percentage every month to different charities of your choosing. So what Percent Pledge also does is provides reports back to you, like here's where your money went, here's where the charity has been spending the donations you've been giving. They make it really easy to get the tax information that you need at the end of the year as well. So they're really kind of like positioning themselves as the place for millennial workers to connect with their charities.
Okay, and explain why that's more attractive to millennial workers like you two than it is to an old baby boomer like me.
Well, I think that this is for everyone, right? I mean, I think...
Yeah, no, just say it. You're more charitable. You're more charitable.
Nicer.
Yeah.
You know what it is, though? I think that, like, people have certainly done studies. I mean, I think that millennials get a bad rap for, like, kind of being the entitled, selfish generation. But I think when you really look at some of the studies that people have done on millennials, that millennials are very giving and want to be very charitable. I mean, maybe we don't have a lot of money based on all the student loans that we're dealing with. But I do believe that millennials, by and large, are willing to donate a certain percentage of their paycheck to causes that are important to them, whether that's for veterans, whether that's for women, whether that's for anything. And I think that this is really a platform for them to do that.
That's Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Catherine Davis is in the studio as well. Our talks with Chicago Inno, sponsored by Illinois Tech's Stewart School of Business. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're playing the favorite music of President James Buchanan on this Monday afternoon, President's Day. Jim Dahlke is on the phone line, and Catherine Davis is in the studio, both from Chicago Inno. Okay, so Jim, we were just talking during the break, Catherine and I, that this is her first tech madness, so she's a complete rookie to it. So she's not going to understand the radical changes you guys are incorporating in this.
Yeah, you know, Tech Madness is really one of my most favorite events that we do, and sort of the editorial things that we package at Chicago. And also, this is the third year that we've done Tech Madness, and it's a bracket competition, very much in the style of March Madness, but around Chicago startups. So we have 64 Chicago startups going against each other in a bracket competition. The community votes, so people go online. We'll have a bracket live on March 7th after our big sort of kickoff event on March 7th. And then people will be able to vote round by round. Basically, the voting will be who would you invest in? So you know, the 16 seed will go up on the one seed and throughout the bracket, and then people will vote online. We'll go round by round until ultimately we crown the Tech Madness champion. So last week we unveiled the first 60 teams that are going to be in the bracket.
And so, but this is different this year, right? Because you chose the 60, but there's like a play-in for four more teams?
Exactly. So folks that kind of nominated companies throughout the last few weeks, we took all those nominations, we got the first 60 together, and we will be adding four more teams at the event on March 7th. So basically how that's going to work is at the event on March 7th, people can pitch companies to us there at the event. We will select the final four that will make the tournament. Basically, you know, think of those as the play-in games, if you will. And, yeah, then that will round out our field of 64 on March 7th.
So is this a thing that people should I be plugging an event here? Can people go and watch this?
Yeah, definitely. So on March 7th, you can check out our site, chicagoino.com, and get all the information on the event. But, yeah, we'll be unveiling the bracket and the final four teams there at the Chicago Sports Museum here in downtown. And then, that will be sort of the kickoff to the event. And the great thing about Tech Madness is it's one of the best events that we do that really highlights what's going on across the entire Chicago tech ecosystem. And this is a snapshot of, you know, the 64, you know, best, most interesting tech startups in this city. So we do this actually in all of the inner cities, and it's a great way to get a snapshot of what's happening not only in Chicago, but Boston, D.C., Austin, and elsewhere.
I love looking at the 60 nominees, like Foxtrot is here, ShiftGig, all these companies that we've spent the last year talking about. So it's kind of fun that way. Catherine said she wanted to talk all about Tech Madness, but it looks like you took all the thunder.
So, sorry about that.
No, I'm just kidding, because she's like, ask Jim. So what does the rookie do? Does she what will Catherine's duties be at Tech Madness?
Yeah, what will they be, Jim?
Well, one of the duties will be listening to the pitches. So we'll be filling in the final four teams, right? So Catherine will be certainly playing a huge role in helping us sort of figure out who those last four teams are going to be. So, if you want to butter up Catherine at the event, please find her, because she will be helping us pick the last 14.
Catherine, you wrote a piece about Tyson Foods partnering with 1871, and we've talked about food in the past few weeks, you know, about how Chicago's become sort of food center, talked about Tyson and their investment. So what are they up to?
Yeah, so, this is kind of just going with that trend. Tyson Foods, they have a $150 million startup venture fund here in Chicago, and they just announced a partnership with 1871, the tech incubator, and then also Plug and Play, which is an accelerator in Silicon Valley. They said they want this partnership because they want to ramp up their innovation initiatives to remain relevant, I mean, as food innovation continues to thrive.
All right, Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke, Chicago Inno. People can read more at chicagoinno.com. Thanks for coming by. Have a great week.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Steve. Yep.
All right. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:36. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I hope if you're home celebrating President's Day, you're doing it maybe with a fire. It's a dreary day out there. Marilyn Bird is on a phone line. She's the district president of Robert Half in Chicago. More than 3.3 million workers voluntarily quit their jobs in December. They just walked away. That's a 17-year high. And then there was an account temp survey found 29% of professionals this year plan to look for a new job. One in three. The job market is heating up, and employers are working to keep hold of their workers. That's one of the things we want to talk to Marilyn about. Marilyn, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be here.
How about that, though, right? I mean, it's become a struggle now for employers to keep workers employed, because the workers got so many choices, they can move on from place to place.
You are so right. You know, we put a lot of focus on the options and the unemployment market, but we forget sometimes about the actual employers and just trying to retain great talent, trying to keep the people that they've hired over the years and develop.
Is it hotter, or is it more difficult now than it has been? And I'm asking that in two ways. One, just obviously the job market has heated up quite a bit, so you've got that. But the other is that we talk so much about millennials. Millennials have different priorities, and employers have to focus on different things in order to keep them happy and keep them engaged at work.
It's a topic I think that every employer is dealing with. The stats from the most recent JOLTS report do indicate that it's more of an issue than it had been, regardless of generation, just because this is the most people that have left their jobs voluntarily in more than 15 years.
And why are they leaving?
The top three reasons that are documented tend to be around salary, you know, not feeling as though they're being compensated fairly for the market. Sometimes it has something to do with their relationship with whoever they report to, you know, maybe not feeling valued, maybe not feeling developed, something along those lines. And then there's a lot of conversation around balance, you know, not having that balance that's equal between life and the amount of time they're spending at work.
So the bosses have an impact certainly on salary. I guess they have an impact on all of it. But I'm interested in sorts of proactive steps that employers are now taking to keep. I was reading that there was a Harvard Business Review study, and it was written by some people predominantly at Facebook. And they talked, one of the things that came up was, you know, that employers used to create or have jobs, and then they would find people to fit those jobs. More likely now, employers are finding people, and then they're creating jobs to fit the people. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, and it goes back to your earlier point, because it's really more representative of the current generation. The conversation has changed the attitude about how to approach work so that there's more of a fit for people is more on employers' mind as they're trying to retain people for longer periods.
Has that been something that's just changed in the past year or two, or have we been seeing this coming for a while?
You know, from my vantage point, I think we've been seeing it for a while. Good people have been hard to find for a long time.
Right.
I think certain industries feel it more than others, depending on what's going on. And I think more and more employers are paying more attention to retention. I think it applies to every generational level. I think the millennial conversation has made this more common in terms of studies and research, but I can't think of any group of people that isn't interested in having a more valuable work environment or work experience.
It seems a little backwards, though. I mean, if I'm an employer looking to get a job done, I have slots, roles that of jobs that need to be done to make that happen. I don't feel like I've got the luxury or the freedom to create jobs for people I like, right? So explain for me how that ends up working in the long run.
That's a factor of the unemployment rates being so low. You know, in the professional sectors, the unemployment rates can be 1% or 2%. So employers are forced to get creative. And if they're open-minded to being creative, they can take a look at the talent. They can think a lot about fit for their culture or their environment. And they can rescope jobs based on the talent they're seeing. Uh-huh. They can rescope jobs based on automation, too.
Adam Grant has been in the studio. We've talked to him before about leadership and management issues, things like that. He talks about having, you know, everyone has an exit interview when an employee leaves. He talks about entrance interviews so that when you start a job, your boss sits down with you, finds out what you sort of like personally, and then crafts the job to you. Is that uncommon? Is it very common? I would imagine it's somewhere in between.
I think it's somewhere in between. Again, it really goes back to the discipline that you're involved with. Our scope is so much around accounting and finance, and it's difficult to be creative when we're talking about specific functions.
The poor accountants don't want to hear those jokes.
I have heard about it in different industries where people are being very open-minded to attract talent.
Well, so then what do you do if you're running an accounting office and you want to, I mean, are there commonalities when it comes to happy workplace? Is there a template and you say you do these things and we will create a positive workplace environment?
Definitely. There's always a lot of attention around salary. Again, people want to feel as though they're being compensated fairly. Work-life balance is a topic that every generation is talking about. Different ones get different press. So however your company or your department can approach that people think that there's a sense of flexibility, that typically goes a long way.
Marilyn, what does it mean? What does workplace balance mean? Does that mean the ability to stay home when you want, to work flexible hours, or you know, just the idea to take a break and play guitar for an hour in the afternoon?
You know what it is? It's more about giving employees control of their schedule.
Mm.
So it's not just geared around one type of person or people with children. It's just some control going to the schedule and allowing the employee to have a choice.
It's interesting because the way we're talking, the employees have so much power right now. I would imagine a lot of them don't realize that. And I would imagine a lot of them are listening right now saying, I don't feel like I work in that sort of place.
might be the case, but, you know, I think this most recent JOLTS report is telling all of us that the confidence must be going up. Candidates made more job changes than they had before, so maybe it will become more a part of the conversation as we move forward this year.
And what do you see when we move forward this year when it comes to the job market?
So far, so good. It seems as though there's a lot of options, and it seems that the candidates are in the driver's seat.
Tell me a little bit about Robert Half, what you do, and how people can get more information.
Robert Half has 7 business lines, all focused in the professional sector. We place people in temporary to hire, and permanent positions.
All right. Thanks very much, Marilyn. I certainly appreciate you joining us, and I hope we can talk again sometime in the future.
Thanks for the time, Steve.
You bet. Bye. Marilyn Bird, District President of Robert Half in Chicago. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. For many, retirement is on the horizon, but what do you do when the day actually comes? Just ask CME Group Chairman Leo Melamed, who will be moving on from his position this May. When you find something as important as financial futures, it may be hard to let it go, but Leo recognizes the path that he paved was important and appreciates the changing times. Something else that could be moving on, the Lincoln Towing Service. The state is wrapping up their investigation into numerous citations related to unauthorized towings from the company. I have a feeling a lot of drivers will feel the same way if they end up losing their license. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. Randy, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, too.
And thank you for coming in on your day off.
Well, anytime. Not really. Don't take me up on that.
What are you doing Saturday? Okay. All right. So you pulled this story about Facebook sending people. I'm not sure I understand it, but I think it's happening to me. I've been getting texts from Facebook about alerts. Let me see if I think I have one. I got one today, and I don't want them. And they're telling me about what other people have been posting, or I've deleted them all. But they'll
That's
say something
good.
Like such and such has just posted, or you know, why don't you remind your friends of this, or things like that. I don't remember signing up to be notified via my cell phone for anything.
So I think this is a glitch, and I believe it was Mashable that reported this. But what's going on right now is a lot of users will have two-step verification set up. So you go to log into your Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah, which I don't have, so I don't know if this is me.
Well, that's,
I mean, I have
weird.
The two-step for other things, but not for Facebook. Right.
Well, I guess this glitch is messaging users that have their two-step verification set up, and it is just sending them updates. And a lot of people, understandably, they don't want these. They just want their codes. So they can
updates
log into
via
their account.
Text. They're getting
right.
Text.
They're getting text messages saying like, "Hey, so and so just posted this link on Facebook. Click to open." And you know, if you're not logged into Facebook, you probably don't want to see that. You don't want it getting pushed to your phone necessarily. So apparently, this is a glitch. So if you get one of these messages, don't reply. If you reply, it will just post your update, whether it be stop, please stop, or please Facebook stop holding me hostage, will post it to your Facebook.
That's
as
kind of funny.
Update.
So some people are responding in a vulgar manner.
Yes, and it immediately gets posted on their Facebook wall.
That's hilarious. So yeah, I'm looking through my phone now and I don't have an example of one, but it will give me a choice to delete or hide alerts, right?
Right.
So I'll hide alerts. Every time I hide alerts, Randy, and they don't get hidden.
They keep coming.
They keep coming, yeah.
Well, hopefully Facebook does say it's just a glitch. So if you're experiencing this, it should be over shortly. Cross your fingers and
But the headline said that Facebook is desperate for engagement because they keep losing people. Are they losing people?
Yeah, I know a lot of younger generations are turning to Snapchat or Instagram. I know Instagram is owned by Facebook, but you know, Facebook's the original. It's the OG, you know, it wants its audience.
So are they getting sort of desperate?
I think so.
Do you think the publicity, the whole Russia thing, is hurting them?
That is a very, very good question. Possibly.
Yeah, my theory is no.
No?
Well, I mean, if they are going to be the social media for the older generation, which is what we're saying,
right?
I don't know if the older generations, I don't think they're going to Snapchat.
No, definitely not.
Or the Instagram.
No, I mean, my mom's still trying to figure out Facebook. Snapchat right. is way over her head. I love you, Mom.
Okay, speaking of Russia, there was a story in the newspaper today, and I see it here as well in TechCrunch, I think, that Facebook, in order to verify their political ads, when they get someone who wants to buy a political ad, they're going to send a postcard to them?
Yes, Facebook is going old school with snail mail.
Tell me about this.
So to kind of combat a lot of the Russian trolls or the bots that we've been seeing, Facebook is trying to do its part. So if you're buying a political ad, it's going to send you a postcard with a number on it that you input into Facebook to make sure that you are, in fact, actually U.S.-based.
So if I want to buy an ad for a candidate, I was going to name one for fun, but there's no sense in that, for Randy Schaefer running for Senate.
Woo!
I would go to Facebook online, vote for Randy Schaefer, and then they would send me a postcard saying, hey, you just tried to buy this ad three days ago.
Right.
And fill out the form, and then you can
here is a pin. Please input this pin online. As long as you have a US-based mailing address and probably not a Russian-based mailing address, you should be good to go.
So if I wanted to be Russian and around this, I just get a P.O. box?
You know, that does seem like a pretty obvious loophole, so I'm hoping that Facebook has thought that out ahead of time.
The other thing is that it doesn't have... This isn't about issue ads.
Right.
This is about candidate
this
ads.
This is candidate
and
ads,
and the interference,
yes.
What we were learning were basically, for the most part, issue ads. They were wedge things that the Russians were drumming up.
So we'll have to see. It's a baby step. It's a good step.
Yeah, I'm rooting for them. I really am. But I don't know that this is going to address it.
No, maybe not.
I don't know what's going to... Okay, don't take away my tweet deck. That's another story you're writing about or brought to my attention.
So, TweetDeck is safe for now.
Thank you.
Again, fingers crossed. So much finger crossing
I don't know
today.
I don't know how I could use Twitter without TweetDeck.
I don't either. I use TweetDeck for everything. But if you use Twitter for Mac, you are in a very unfortunate situation because Twitter is shutting it down.
Right.
I don't know anyone that uses it.
So Twitter for Mac is just that's sort of an app, right? You could still go online to Twitter.com.
Yeah, you can still go on to Twitter.com or the app on your phone, but Twitter for Mac, just the desktop app, which I don't, again, know anybody that's used it in the last 5 years.
I have a Facebook desktop app that I don't even use. Do you use that?
No.
Right. I just go to the website.
Exactly, yeah.
So, okay, so they're taking that away because people haven't used it. They bought it up. Twitter bought it up from someone. And so the fear now is that some other things that other applications that Twitter has purchased,
like
TweetDeck, could go away.
Oh, I hope not.
What do you think the chances are?
I don't think so. I think, like I said, I didn't know anyone. Did you know anyone that used Twitter for Mac?
No.
But you know a ton of people that use TweetDeck.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, TweetDeck is a way to take your Twitter feed and it breaks them into columns. So you can choose, I've got a news column, I've got a Chicago news column, I've got a business column, a books column, all on one page so that it really sort of digest your Twitter feed.
Right, and we're the same upstairs at the Tribune where all of us have a separate monitor just dedicated to our TweetDeck columns.
Right, right. Okay, so, we're just about out of time, but I want to go to Austria. You're going to Europe in a couple weeks?
Yes, I am.
And you're going
less
to...
Less than 2 weeks,
you're
it's crazy.
Maybe heading toward Austria, not too far away.
Yeah, northern Italy, it's pretty close.
So this new thing are these pool grill parties that are bad news for Germans?
Yes, I will try to avoid them while I'm there, but this is, I guess, kind of the European version of the Tide Pod Challenge where...
Wait, of the what challenge?
The Tide Pod Challenge. Don't tell me you haven't participated.
Oh, I was thinking the Ice Bucket Challenge.
No, well, this does kind of have a philanthropic spin to it.
Right.
But basically what this is these Europeans will kind of film themselves throwing a summer party in the winter, like grilling out in the snow or
so
whatever.
So there's a fire department in an abandoned fountain in the water. And
exactly,
and
yes. So these four German men decided to convert the bed of a truck into a pool. Then they decided to back the truck up with the water and these men in it, and all of them ended up injured. Don't do this.
And so the water sloshed them out of the truck?
Out of the truck, yeah, and into the hospital.
And maybe sloshed is the key word in this sentence. Do you think it could be?
I think that might have had something to do with it,
Randy,
slashed in multiple
Randy
ways.
Randy Schaefer is a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.